thank you very much for the warm welcome. My name is Cass, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm really glad to be here tonight. I can't say this is my favorite thing to do, because it's just not. But it has to be done. It has to be done. My sponsor often introduces herself this way. She says, because of God's power, a great sponsor, desperate actions, and the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, she's been sober since whatever, and I've been sober since May 25th, 1985. And for that, I will be forever grateful. That's what my prayer is. So, thank you very much. I am a little nervous, and I don't even feel bad about it, you know. Sometimes it hits me, and sometimes it doesn't. And when I had 2 years ago, when I was coming up on my 25th anniversary, my sponsor called me, and she said, you know what, I'm going to be speaking in Minneapolis at Gopher State the weekend that your birthday is. Would you like to go with me as my guest? And I couldn't even hardly talk. I was like, huh, you know? And I says, absolutely, that would be so cool, you know? So she comes to my hometown. She lives in Montana, and at the time I was living in Wyoming. She came to my hometown, and it was my home group on Thursday, just like it is tonight. And she spoke at our meeting there. And she did a wonderful, an amazing knockout talk. You know, it was just like, wow. And so the next day we're on the plane and we're going to Minneapolis. And she says, you know what? I'm nervous. And I was like, she's got 32 years now. She had 30 years of sobriety at the time. I was like, you got 30 years of sobriety. You get nervous? Holy cow, you know? And so I says, well, I can't blame you for being nervous. I think I'd be a little nervous, too. There was over 5,000 people where she was going to speak. And over the weekend, it went up to like almost 9,000 people arrived at some point. So, you know, that's a lot of people to talk to. And I said, you know, what I would do is pretend like I was speaking to my home group like you were last night and just tell your story, you know, because it's the only story we got. And none of us, you know, drank to come up with a great story, you know. Although you hear some great stories, you know, and you may not be one of them, but don't feel bad. Tell your story. Because, you know, it's not the adventurers, really, that we're here to share. It's the great good news that there's a solution for a seemingly hopeless state of body and mind. And that's really what the message is. And sometimes we forget, you know, or we get, you know, distracted. And so maybe I should tell my story now. I'll try to keep an eye on the time. But, yeah. I was born in Virginia, and I was born in Richmond, Virginia, and I was raised right outside on a farm. My parents were drinkers, and I believe they were alcoholic. My mom did die of alcoholism, and my dad had quite a drinking problem. So I felt like it was the family business, you know, drinking. And when I was growing up, my parents had, like, parties. They would stay home and drink. They would go out to, like, families. Our family was not very big, but there was a few people in my family, aunts, uncles, and stuff, and they would get together on occasion, and it was always quite interesting for those kids like me. The cousins would witness the family getting together and drinking, and it was just, you never knew what was going to happen. You know, if you're from that kind of a family, you know, you never knew, you know, is my aunt going to fall down and pretend like her ankle is broken and start screaming and wailing and calling for my dad, her brother, let Roscoe rub my leg. He's the only one that can do it, you know, and And you're like, why is she acting like this? You know, it's just crazy. And so the kids were always like watching the adults and seeing what was going to go on. And so drinking always seemed like a time to get crazy and a time to see what was going to happen. You know, it was excitement and interesting. Something interesting was going to happen. Because when you grow up on a farm in the middle of Virginia where you're, nothing is close, there is nothing there interesting. Believe me, you know, there's cows, you know, the barn, you know, the leaves are changing. I mean, you know, I could not wait to get away from that place. You know, being a budding alcoholic, life was going by, and I was sitting on a farm in Virginia going, When is it going to be my turn, you know? So growing up, I remember the first time I got really plastered was I was 14, and I had this girlfriend. Now, she was known as being the bad girl in the neighborhood, and our little town, if you want to say it was like a railroad crossing with the road going across the railroad. And there was a used car lot and a pool hall. And that was Beaver Dam, Virginia. I don't know what's going on there now, but that's all that was going on. And there might be 150 to 250 people in the whole shebang within, I don't know, 50 or 100 miles. And so at 14, I knew that the bad girl in town was Luann. And I was not supposed to hang around with her because she was known for being a bad girl. So, of course, she was my best friend. You know, she knew where to get in trouble. She knew where to go and what to do. And I, being a little know-nothing, I was kind of like, you know, fat, dumb, and happy. And I didn't know how to get in trouble. You know, I was looking for trouble, but I didn't know how, you know. So I get with Luann. And she, I don't know how it happened, you know. All of a sudden, went over to her house to spend the weekend, of course. And we got away from her family, her parents, her, you know, supervision that was supposed to be there in place for me, of course. all of a sudden, we were like in a car with strange guys. We were 14, okay, and we're in a car with grown men. I don't know where we're going or what we're doing, but there is Boone's Farm and Strawberry Hills, you know, wine in the car. And, you know, this is heaven. You know, this has got to be heaven, you know. And so we got really wasted, of course, on the cheap wine and stuff. And thank God, you know, those gentlemen were very respectful of two 14-year-olds. I think it had something to do with the police not getting involved. You know, they didn't want to do anything where the police might get involved. So, but they were very nice to us and stuff, and we just drove around and stuff. Well, Luann and I decided we would stir up some more excitement. It wasn't, you know, things weren't happening as much. So we decided to vandalize the elementary school. So we took soap, and I don't know where we got it from. It was a brick building, and we just, you know, we couldn't spell, I'm sure, at that point. we didn't know if our butt was up or down, but we were, you know, writing who knows what on the bricks. And that makes a nice mark on the building, and we expressed our rights to express ourselves were taken care of that night and stuff. And she got in trouble. Everybody knew Luann. Like I said, you know, nobody had to, you know, just an outline. Oop, that's Luann, you know. But they didn't know who was with her. And I thought it was so cool. She didn't tell who was with her, you know. So we were like partners in crime, you know. We were covering for each other and stuff. And, you know, that was my first drinking experience, and it didn't really change after that. You know, that was a pretty good example of how my drinking went. It was kind of lame and mostly involved drinking. You know, that was the main thing, is there something to drink, and, you know, what are you going to have? All mine, you know. So you know, fast forward to, I'm 18 and I have no job skills, and I'm getting out of school, and my mother is proclaiming she's worried about me, you know, because she didn't want to take care of me. My brother is gone from home. He is quite a bit older than me, and he was gone for a long time. I felt like an only child, you know, because he was gone a long time before I was coming along. And I just, you know, I wasn't ambitious, we'll say. And sometimes things don't change, but, you know. I went to my dad, and my dad is my buddy. You know, we drank, and my mother tries to control everybody in the house. And she drank, too, but, you know, somehow she thought she was still the Al-Anon, you know. And so she thinks that she's going to kick me out of the house, you know, to force me to start working and being a productive citizen, which seemed drastic, you know. It seemed like a very, you know, I missed over 30 days of school my senior year, you know, and I my grades come in, my mom looks at me, she goes, how did you really miss 33 days of school last year? And I went, I don't know, Mom. You know, I wasn't going to tell the truth, but, you know, it's a wonder I graduated. It was crazy. It wasn't so fussy like they are nowadays. I don't know. I probably wouldn't have graduated now, but I have my graduation certificate. And so my dad is talking to me, and he's like, you know, your mom's going to throw you out of the house. I go, yes, I know. I'm scared. What am I going to do, Dad? I can't get a job. I don't have a car. I don't, you know, I had no job skills. It was recession then, too. It was 1973. And there weren't a lot of jobs. There wasn't a lot going on. And my dad had been in the Navy. My brother had been in the Navy. And he says, well, maybe you could join the military, you know. And I went, you know, I mean, at the time, a woman going to the military was shocking. It was like, what? You know, the Vietnam War was going on and things. And at first I just laughed. I thought he was kidding. I swear, I thought he was really kidding. I, you know, knowing me and what a space cadet I was, I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm military material, buddy, you know, yeah, discipline, yeah, that's me, you know. So, but he kept after it, you know, and finally he said, if you will just talk to the recruiter, I will get off your back, you know. And I thought, well, that sounds reasonable, you know. Well, he knew what I didn't know at the time is that they are trained to recruit people, and they know what to do, you know. And so not that it was too hard. Once the recruiter figured out what my main motivators were, it was like, hey, I thought it was a great idea after that. But in Virginia at the time, the drinking age was 21, and it was still hard getting enough to drink or to get anything to drink. It was really tough. And he pointed out to me that all the bases, the drinking age was 18. You know, you get into the enlisted men's club, you know. And then he said that word, men. It's like, wow, there's men. It's the Navy. You've got all those sailors. Jeez, you know. And I just didn't know what a real, you know, gold mine that was going to be. You know, there was like three boys in Beaver Dam, Virginia, and they were all like, you know, rather odd looking, we'll say. And so, you know, I joined the Navy, and I'm really, you know, excited and happy about this. And I got through boot camp. God only knows how. I was only as big as a broomstick. I mean, I was so skinny and thin, and thankfully they didn't have a lot of physical, you know, tasks and stuff to do. I guess I was pretty wiry. I had grown up on a farm. I did, you know, wrestle the cows and pigs and in and out of the, you know, the barns and things and, you know, hay bales and all that farm work. I mean, we did do some farm work. And so I guess I wasn't in too bad a shape. But still, you know, it was girl boot camp at the time. I think they probably make it worse now. I don't know. So I get out of boot camp and I go to A school. And the bar, the EM club, is right next door. I mean, seriously, from here to the corner of that room is the women's barracks. It was like, wow, wow, you know, I mean, it was great, you know, and they sold, they had like a little grill there too, so you could pretend like you were going to go eat, you know, dinner or something. They gave you, you know, comrades and things, and but really the bar was there, you know, and guys. There's a lot of guys there, and I just thought, wow, I have arrived. You know, in the big book where Bill is talking about his experience in the military, you know, I had arrived at last. You know, life was really going on. And boy, could I relate to that once I read it. you know, I didn't read the big book right away. You know, I thought that was drastic measures. You know, it's a little... So... I did, though. I was really, it was exciting. You know, there were so many guys. I mean, even when after I got married twice while I was in the military. They kept asking me. I couldn't think of a good reason to say no. I should have said no, but, you know, it seemed like a good idea at the time, isn't it? You know, I mean, it happened over and over again. It seems like a good idea. Let's see if it works, you know. So even when I was married, you know, you go to the EM club to get something to eat. I swear, you know, when I was married, I was going to get something to eat. And you cannot sit down because, I mean, there was just like hundreds of guys there, all very far away from home and very lonely. And you're like, you know, one of 15 or 20 women. And you look like, you know, Sophia Loren or Jennifer Aniston. Yeah, I'm trying to think up date here. You know, you look like a hot babe. I don't care what you look like to those, you know, woohoo, you know. So, you know, you couldn't even eat. You couldn't get around the EM club without, you know, two, three guys dragging you out on the dance floor and trying to, you know, buy you drinks and different things. So it was really a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun drinking. And I had a lot of fun, you know, just running around and dancing and stuff. And so after the first divorce, I was still in the Navy. And I remember... you know, even then, things were going wrong, you know. Me and my girlfriend, she was a first-class petty officer, and I was a third-class petty officer. And so we would run around together. She was single, and I hadn't been when I first met her, but now I was. And we went to this bar, you know. We were going to go meet some nice guys there, and we were just going to have some drinks, nothing, you know, else. And they asked us to leave. We both got so drunk. We were such drunken women. And we were doing things, like we were taking things off the table and sticking them in our purse. Now, why were we doing that? Because we were drunk. I don't know. And I didn't, you know, I get reminded of this later. It's like, oh, yeah, I guess we did do that. But they, you know, like the bouncer came in and kind of, you know, scooped us up and kind of moved us toward the front door. And they were like, please don't come back, you know, just don't come back, you know. It's like, God, you know, when we're on base, that never happens, you know. They never kick us out and stuff. But things, you know, I started being invited not to return. That was a recurring theme, you know. People loved it for a while when I came around, and then they'd invite me not to return, you know. It's like, even my girlfriends, they go, well, it's okay for you, Cindy, but, you know, do we have to tell Cass that we're having a party? Can't we just, you know, not let her know? You know? Can we leave her home? Because when she comes to the party, you know, things get broken. Cars run into buildings. You know, and it's not even her car. That's what's so upsetting. If it was her car, it'd be different. But no, it's my car and stuff. And the police show up, you know, and it's just not fun and things. And, so that's what was happening already. But I just like to have a good time. You know, that was my thing. I like to have a good time. And if you didn't think that my idea of having a good time was the same, then you were just a stick in the mud, and I needed to find new friends. So seeking lower companions, I didn't know that's what I was doing. I just thought I was looking for people who like to have fun. And so I married the second guy. And we moved to Connecticut, and I did a lot of my drinking right down the road in Orlando, back when they had the training command there and the schools, training schools and stuff. That's where I was stationed for quite a while. They had a nuclear power school over there and stuff. So I got rid of the first husband, but the first husband got rid of me. Really, that's what it is. I got more honest about that a few years ago, is that he really got rid of me because I was quite the liability. So he wanted to make the first class. He didn't expect it to happen with me hanging on to him. But I got married to this other guy, and because I thought he drank like I drank. You know, that's how I picked boyfriends and mates and stuff. It's like, if they could keep up with me, then they were, wow, this is a match made in heaven, you know. We're going to do it up well and stuff. So this guy asked me to get married, and it seemed like a good idea at the time. And I didn't hardly know him. I know that's hard to believe, right? But I really didn't know him at all. And I really, at the time, I was just in my early 20s, and I really, somehow I got confused. And I thought, when you get married, it's kind of like going steady, you know? And if things don't work out, you can just, you know, take off, you know? I didn't know that that was like a commitment. What's that, you know? I mean, the Navy, they made me sign a contract, and they would not let me go home. I thought, God, that is so harsh, you know? After about 6 months, I thought, you know, I really should go home. And their chief was going, no way, we've got you, you know. And so I did, I stayed. But and I got out with an honorable discharge, and I'm so grateful and glad. I did pull some shenanigans, but they let me out with an honorable discharge, and I really appreciate that. Bless their hearts. They didn't press me hard to reenlist, I got to tell you. They usually go around and lobby and try to get you to reenlist. No. Didn't happen for me. So I'm married to this guy. We moved to Connecticut. And he, really, I thought I had picked so well, you know. And he's drinking like I drink. And the only thing, I didn't really think about it very much at the time, but he has a top secret clearance. And he works with on the nuclear submarine tender. It was a submarine tender, and he worked with the nuclear bombs and things that they would load on and off the submarines and stuff. And then he and his chief would run up to Canada and then bring drugs back, you know, and all of them had top secret clearances. And I thought, oh, well, this is great, you know. I don't even have to score. I just can sit home and my husband brings home drugs and stuff. It was great, you know, and he's got a top secret clearance. They probably won't mess with him or arrest him or anything. This will work out all right. And it didn't scare me that he was working with nuclear power or nuclear bombs and all that stuff. You know. Be careful, honey, you know. You know, that's that. Now I look back on it, it's like, oh, my gosh, you know, were we insane? But, yes, we were. And so, but he was a different kind of guy. I thought, you know, this is really working out well for me. And but he's a different kind of guy. And I should have noticed when we were dating. We did date a few times, I guess. We went out 2-3 times before we got married. But he, we're having a few drinks, and we're looking, you know, long, meaningful looks from eye to eye and everything. He's like, I would just never hit you. Now, that's a sweet nothing I'd never heard in my ear before, you know? I mean, you know, I'd never been around guys that were violent, you know? Seriously, I mean, I was around a lot of sailors, but none of them looked very violent, and, in fact, my ex-husband told me that when he was in Vietnam, they took the Navy guys, they wouldn't let them carry guns. And if they had to carry a gun, they wouldn't let them have any bullets because they were so irresponsible with their weapons. So, and so, you know, that's what I was around. So, you know, I'm thinking, why would this, you know, and I'm drinking. I'm going, I'm being silly, you know. But, of course, you know, he'd hit every woman he'd ever been around. And so, you know, that was just a matter of time. At some point, you know, he started hitting me and threatening me and trying to control me and everything. And I'm not very manageable. You know, I'm an alcoholic and I don't manage well. But he tried, that's for sure. And at some point, you know, I'm like, you know, he's interfering with my drinking. you know, pretty much. I think that that actually might have saved my life because I didn't stay with him and I left him. And I ran into this lady that drank like I drank, I thought, you know, a girlfriend of mine. And I'm out of the Navy now, of course, and everything. And I'm, my brother calls me and he says, I understand you're having some trouble. My brother was quite a bit older than me. And he's being the older brother trying to take care of me. And he says, come to California. I was living in Connecticut. He says, come on out to California where I am. The guys there are really nice. They don't hit their women, you know. I didn't know, did you know that? Guys in California, never, they are not abusive. Those guys are just really, you know, they're just really kick back, chill out guys, you know. That's what my brother tells me. And so I go out to California, and my girlfriend says, well, why? Why should you fly to California? Let's make this a real cool trip, you know. We're not working. We'll just save up our money before we quit working. And I was getting money for going to school from the Navy and stuff, the GI Bill, whatever. And so I was saving up my little money and stuff. And she goes, we'll just hitchhike and go camping and have backpacks and stuff. We'll just rough it all the way from Connecticut out to California. We'll go to Canada. We'll go to Mexico if you want to. We'll go all over the place. You know, we had friends across the country and stuff. And we did. We took like 3 months. And we hitchhiked across the country, and it was 1982. It was very safe for two young women to hitchhike by themselves across country because nothing happened to me except drinking. We drank a lot, you know, and so I knew all about the park rangers in Yellowstone and the truckers and, you know, going across South Dakota and, you know, just all kinds of things. We traveled a lot and we met some really sweet, wonderful people that took us in and tried to take care of us against our will, I might add, because we were bound and determined to stay loaded as much as we could and seek out, you know, unsavory characters, you know. And some of these people were older and they were like, honey, you guys are young and innocent. We're like, we didn't try to correct them. They thought we were young and innocent, and they wanted to protect us from ourselves, which we desperately needed, I might add. But we did fine, and I really remember that trip as a highlight of my life, so I'm really glad I did that. I'm thinking maybe if I was sober and knew better, I probably wouldn't have done that. But I did, and I'm here to tell the tale, so that makes a difference. So I get to California, and my drinking seems to take a real turn. You know, I've been divorced, married and divorced twice now, and the last guy was really bad news. You know, I was just really lucky I didn't miss, you know, lose teeth or get broken bones and things. It was really serious. And so I've got a real resentment about men now. I found out they're not always fun, especially the ones I pick. And my picker is definitely not good. And so I'm trying to work. I still have no job skills. I have no skills. And I just start working as a waitress. I start working part-time at temp agencies for like office work and things like that. Because, you know, otherwise, if I had a real job I had to be at all the time, it interfered with my drinking, you know. And I needed to drink. I needed to drink as often as possible. And you guys that got to drink every day, you know, good. But that's not my story. I couldn't drink every day, man. I got too sick. I get so sick. I couldn't keep it down. You know, I had to wait a few days to heal up or get better so I could get it to stay down and stuff. And I was just sick when I drank a lot. I was even kind of a lame alcoholic in a way. I did the best I could, I'll tell you that. I worked hard at it. And I was starting to get suicidal, you know, because I'd been rejected. I was rejected by, you know, a reject. You know, that ex-husband was no peach, you know, when I got done with him. he was no peach. And so, you know, I'm just having trouble. So, I decide, my girlfriend tells me, She doesn't even drink. She just hangs around me. I don't know. There's something very sick about friends that want to hang around with you when you're drinking a lot, and they don't even really drink. Very suspicious, you know. Those Al-Anons, they are sick, 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 sick. So she's telling me, she's like, honey, you know, you're really drinking a lot, and you really don't have any job skills. Why don't you go to school? There's a community college down the street and everything. And, see, that's what's wrong. I need a better job. I need a better life. I need education. I've got the GI Bill. I can go back to school, you know, and finish some degree or other. So I start trying to go to school, and that's where I meet him with a capital H. Him. Woo! You know. And he's just real cute, and he's real smart. He's got a job and an apartment and a car. You know, and those three things didn't always go together with the guys I went out with, you know. They usually would come over to my apartment at any time of the night or day because they didn't really work, and they'd have a six-pack, and they'd expect to spend the next, you know, week or two, you know. Woo, here I am. And so this guy had a job. My gosh, you know, I was really amazed. And so, but I took care of that. Within 3 months of dating him, he'd quit his job, sold his car, and was living in a house with a bunch of other people. You know, there was like six bedrooms in this big house. And so I'd go over to visit him because now I'm living with my brother again because I can't take care of myself, right? My brother, thankfully, is still drinking a lot, so he'll put up with me. And bless his little heart. I got sober, and as far as I know, I'm the only person in my family that did. And my family is just riddled with alcoholism. You know, my mom died of alcoholism. My brother, last of my son, was not in his right mind because of drinking. It was very sad and awful. And so I'm dating this guy, and we decide to, you know, the next step is to move in together, you know, because we're both getting GI Bill. So between the two of us, we can afford an apartment. And so we get together and stuff. And I spend a few years there trying to go to school when I can, working when we can. We use and get drunk. That's what we do. That's our relationship, using and drinking. And at some point, though, I decide I'm going to leave. And I can't do it anymore. You know, this guy is just... he's like, he's not there, you know, like most of us, you know, many of us, you know, he's just not there. He's really hollow. There's just a shade, a shadow of a person there. And I thought, you know, I'm trying to get my life back together. I'm trying to get to school. I'm trying to do something. And this guy is, I don't know, he's like a mental patient, you know, I don't know what he is. So I'm going to leave him, and I tell him I'm going to leave and stuff. And he says, well, I think I have a drinking problem. I thought, oh my God, you're kidding, you know. And he says, you know, people tell me that if I want to stay sober, I mean, he was thinking about going to AA. He hadn't even been to AA yet. He says, people tell me that if I want to get sober, I have to tell the truth. And I have to tell you that I murdered my sister when I was 16 and made it look like a suicide. And this was great news to me. I've been with this guy for like 3 years, and I was just like freaked totally out. I had no program, no anything, and so you know, I'm just scared to death. You know, now I realize that he's really just as sick as I suspected. You know, I mean, I should have known. If somebody's going to be with me, not a good sign. You know, but that's just me. And. But it was shocking, you know. He told me the circumstances and stuff, and it was premeditated. I mean, he was a bona fide nut, you know. And I had picked him. I thought, this guy is really good. So he tells me this at like 1 o'clock in the morning, and I can't go to sleep because I'm afraid he's going to kill me. It's like the last woman he loved, he murdered. And he tells me he doesn't want me to leave. He loves me, and he knows I'm leaving. I'm like, great timing of mine. So, but I did, you know, I got out of there, and he did stalk me for a couple of years. And right around that time, when I moved out from living with him, I realized I couldn't quit drinking. No matter what I did, I couldn't quit. And it really frightened me. I really thought if I wanted to quit, I could quit. I'm one of those people. I thought I could quit. And And I could not. And so I was very frightened. And one night I found myself in an AA meeting. And I really have trouble telling you how I got there. A lot of what I tell you is like stuff that I remember in bits and pieces, because I was 2 or 3 years sober before I really had memories about, you know, like some people could tell you all the first meetings that they went to. I remember the first meeting I went to, and after that I can't remember very much for a year. You know, I was just not there too. And I remember seeing things and hearing things that weren't there, you know, which scared me. And I was just, I was afraid to even tell my sponsor that I was seeing things. I was having hallucinations. And I knew that people that did that were like crazy. And I said, God, am I crazy? Because if I am, I don't know what to do. But, you know, they told me I was trying to get sober then. I had a sponsor and stuff and going to meetings. And I told God, I said, God, if I'm truly insane, get me the help I need. But in the meantime, I'm going to put one foot in front of the other and hope that that you're going to take care of me, or somebody's going to get me some help, you know, because I don't know what else to do. I was scared to death. I wouldn't even tell my sponsor these things were happening. And that went on for a while. And then all of a sudden one day, I realized I hadn't had a hallucination for quite a while. And I don't really know what that was or anything, you know, it just came and went. And but it took me a long time to get my mind back. And so this guy kept stalking me, and it was pretty scary. And he even tried to contact me up until about 10 or 15 years ago. You know, he still was trying to track me down, and that was not a happy thing. But hasn't found me yet, so as far as I know. And I do avoid him and stuff. But anyway, to tell you, you know, I had a sponsor, and I did my steps and stuff, and it was different. I was like the educational variety. You know, I didn't have a white light experience, but I did have a God consciousness that was so dramatic that I could not deny that that's what was going on for me. And me and God got to know each other, and I have a relationship with God today that's amazing. And I was so sick when I started out. I didn't know if that was possible for me. I heard you guys talking about this program working for you, but I thought, you know, I just don't think that can happen for me. And people kept saying, keep coming back, don't leave before the miracle happens. And I'm thinking, there's no miracle for me. You know, I don't think I got one. You know, you guys are different. You know, but it did. I kept coming back, and the miracle happened. And that can happen for anybody, any one of us in this room. If you haven't got it, whatever that means, keep coming back. Work with that sponsor. Do everything that they tell you that you're not doing. Do it. You know, take some suggestions and do that. As far as my life today, I went to a lot of meetings, and I did a lot of service, and I was very involved. You know, they told me to get there early and help set up, and I would. And they said, stay after and talk to the people that have sobriety, and I did. And I'd go to coffee with them, and they would talk about Alcoholics Anonymous, and they would talk about how they got sober and who else was sober in the area. I got sober in a wonderful place, Southern California. It was amazing to get sober there. There's just hundreds and hundreds of meetings and just all kinds of stuff, kind of not unlike Tampa. You know, I've moved here now, and it's been really a wonderful experience living here for the last year. I want to touch just briefly on, you know, I had this thing with, you know, this problem with guys and stuff. And through the program and the steps, I learned how to get, you know, sane and get some healing and some recovery in my relationships and stuff. So I stopped dating crazy guys. And if I was dating someone that was crazy, I could say, hey, you know, this isn't working for me. Don't call me anymore, you know. I'm going to be busy now and things. And that was something I never knew how to do, you know. I thought once I was stuck with them, I was just stuck. And So I was 5 years sober, and I ran into my husband. I didn't know that's who he was, but I ran into my husband at a sober dance that was after a meeting. And we were not, I want to say he's not a peach at the time, you know, but neither was I, you know. We were just crazy newcomers, kind of. And we ended up falling madly in love. And we prayed together, and we had like a real cool sober life together as best we could do. And we've grown together in this program. In 1991, we had a little girl, and she grew up, and she never saw her parents drink. You know, she didn't have those fun weekends with the extended family all getting drunk and stuff like that. She didn't have that, you know. She had parents that were there to pick her up from school when they said that they would. She had a home with the utilities paid, and the mortgage was paid, and all those boring things that I always hated before that I love today because they're part of my sober life. And one of the most wonderful things is I have a wonderful sponsor, and she has a sponsor, and I get to sponsor women today. And no matter how crazy they are, it doesn't even faze me. You know, it's just like the crazier they are, the better I like it, because that's me. You know, that's me. I'm right there. You know, it's like, yeah, I remember when I did that, honey. You just keep coming back. I'll pick you up. We'll go have coffee. You know. And stuff, and it's just fun. It's just a lot of fun. And if you're new, I hope you stay. Please stay here, because, you know, I happen to know that this is that thing you've been looking for all your life and thought you would never find, the thing that you were always looking for in the bottle. It's right here in this room. And I just thank you very much for listening tonight. I appreciate being here.